This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharisa, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 41 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. The takes. The takes are flying everywhere. If you guys have listened to my annoying voice since I started doing this podcast back in April, then you know I've got some love for Kareem Hunt. He had a good rating in my prospect model, and if we follow what the Chiefs' actual actions have been this offseason, they only benefit Kareem Hunt. The Chiefs not only drafted him in the third round, but they traded up to get Kareem Hunt. And Spencer Ware, aside from last year, has been a career committee back, which includes college. But guys, let's relax a bit. I know we're all thirsty for some regular season football, but we don't need to be irrational as a result. Just because Kareem Hunt saw a ton of first-team snaps and played well doesn't automatically mean he's the starter in Kansas City. Just like Kenny Golladay, sorry, Babytron, isn't going to score 14 touchdowns this year. And just like how Ryan Mallett really isn't that bad of a quarterback. Okay, I'm just kidding. Ryan Mallett really, really sucks. Seriously though, let's calm down for a second. Take notes on the preseason and see who's performing well, sure. I analyze every game that happens too. But I don't want a game or two to overshadow the thoughtful analysis that's been done for 7 months prior to this point. Don't fall in love with players based on how they're playing against second string defenses. Have fun with it though. My goodness, please have fun with it. That's what football in the NFL and fantasy football is all about. Having a good time. But if you want to win your fantasy football league, don't be blinded by what's going on in these preseason games, because that can lead to an overvaluation of those players. And as is the case this season, there are plenty of overrated guys in my eyes in fantasy football. Today I'll go over 10 of them. 10 players I'm generally avoiding at their cost during fantasy drafts this year. But before we dig into those 10 guys, I wanted to send a quick note that with the NFL season just around the corner, remember that you can catch all the games on TuneIn and the TuneIn app. At home or on the go, listen to the home call of every game live, or pop in and out of the action every Sunday with NFL First and Goal. That's TuneIn's audio red zone station. Download the TuneIn app today and listen to the NFL for free for 30 days. TuneIn is your everything audio app. Now let's look at the 10 most overvalued players in fantasy, starting with number 10 and working our way to the most overvalued. There are two things that suck about doing overvalued lists. The first is that people bash you a lot more for lists like this because you're saying bad things about players instead of good things. Listeners and readers do not like that. But the other thing is that you're really forced to focus on the earlier rounds of drafts because you can't really be overrated as a late round pick. And when you're looking at the earlier rounds, you're generally looking at good players. And when you're looking at good players, they can always prove you wrong. Last year, Landry finished with 94 receptions, but after Jay Ajayi's breakout, things were not smooth sailing. From weeks 1 through 5, Landry was pacing towards 109 catches on the year. But then the Dolphins became very, very run-heavy. They were the third most run-heavy team in football after that week 5, and he averaged 5.45 receptions per game for the remainder of the season. That's fine, that's not that bad, but it doesn't necessarily give him as high of a ceiling as we'd probably like. And the big thing with that is that Landry is a fairly volume-driven dude. That's what you'll get for anyone who has a low average depth of target like Landry does and has had over the last few seasons. And then there's this Jay Cutler thing. We know there was somewhat of a rapport between Ryan Tannehill and Jarvis Landry, but we don't know if that'll be the case with Cutler. Cutler's also already praised Devontae Parker since joining the team, and Parker does profile more of the type of receiver, Alshon Jeffrey specifically, that Cutler's made fantasy relevant in the past. An emergence from Parker could do damage to the market share for Landry. Add in the Dolphins wanting to be a run-heavy, slow-paced team, or at least the assumption given what they did last season, and it's pretty easy to see why I think Landry is more of a wide receiver 3 than the wide receiver 2 he's often drafted as. Again, this one isn't that big of a deal. I still think there are places for Landry on fantasy football teams, and he'll provide a safe enough floor. But there are some warning signs. At number 9, I've got basically the anti-Jarvis Landry, and that's Derrick Henry. I say anti-Landry because, unlike Landry, I can see a path to a lot of upside for Derrick Henry. But I also think that path includes an injury to one DeMarco Murray, and I'm not in the business of predicting injuries. That's why I can't get behind drafting Henry in most formats. I do own a share on a team just in case that Murray injury does occur, but I've got to speak to people who are only owning one or two fantasy teams this season, not the 4,600 fantasy teams like I do. Yes, that's an exaggeration. Henry had the 47th highest market share in football last year, and he toted the rock 10 or more times in just three contests. Even with a much beefier market share number like 35%, that could be roughly 170 carries or so, but they may force unpredictable production. That, and we're also assuming a lot if Henry's able to increase his workload by that much. I love Derrick Henry as a prospect, and I think that he's going to be a very, very good running back in the NFL. I'm just not ready to draft him in the 6th or 7th round when right now he's just a really good handcuff with unpredictable weekly output. Next on the countdown is probably the biggest surprise. Travis Kelce. Before you slam your phone or computer on the ground in disgust, just hear me out. Hear me out, guys. You guys may have heard Rich Rebar's Kelce rant on this show a month ago, and if you haven't, you should go back and listen to the Data That Matters episode. Rich dropped the mic, and he dropped an epic manual air horn. But he was right about Kelce. As much as I love Travis Kelce the player, the offense he plays in and the quarterback he plays with, they're both limiting. His ADP has risen a good bit since Jeremy Maclin was released from the team, which isn't a shock because his market share without Maclin last year was north of 27%, which is absolutely insane. In some expert drafts, you'll see him fall off the board in the early or mid third round. I just think that's a pretty steep price to pay for a player who's playing a onesie position, which is tight end, meaning there's less demand and you can get viable players later in the drafts. But more importantly, I think it's steep because the dude doesn't score touchdowns at a position that basically thrives on scoring touchdowns. Not only has Kansas City ranked 24th, 26th, and 28th in touchdown passes over the last 3 years, but Kelce's also seen no more than 18 red zone targets in a single season, which happened last year, no more than 7 from within his opponent's 10-yard line, which also happened last year, and no more than 3 from his opponent's 5-yard line, which also happened in 2016. To give you some perspective on this, over the last 5 years, we've seen 22 tight end instances with 19 or more red zone targets, good for 4.4 instances per season. Meaning at Travis Kelce's peak last season in terms of red zone volume, he still was not at the peak at the tight end position. When you look at Kelce's 7 targets from within his opponent's 10-yard line, there's been an average over this time period, over the last 5 years, of 8.6 tight ends hitting that mark per season. And then within the 5-yard line, we've seen 13.6 tight ends hit that mark per season. Those are Travis Kelce's career highs. It's not that Kelce is incapable of scoring touchdowns. It's that the offense doesn't allow him to score touchdowns. And because of that, while he may finish high in the tight end standings, he's not a valuable pick in fantasy football. I'd rather him fall to the 4-5 turn where I'd feel most comfortable drafting him. Lamar Miller is next on the list, coming in at the 7th most overvalued player in fantasy football. Over the offseason, we heard Coach Bill O'Brien say that they overused Lamar Miller last year, especially to start the season. So what did Houston go and do? They went out and drafted Deontay Foreman, an early down back with a ton of potential in the 3rd round of the NFL draft. Miller saw 268 attempts last year, which was by far the most that he's seen throughout his career. And he was not effective. And it's not just because he was in an inefficient offense either. His 35.45% success rate, or the percentage of positive expected points runs made by Miller, was the worst among all Texans running backs last year. I think there's a real chance they limit Miller's overall usage this season, and Foreman has a skill set to potentially steal goal line work from Miller too. It adds up to him being overrated at RB13 according to fantasyfootballcalculator.com. I've got him closer to RB17, and that's a pretty big difference. At number 6, I'm going to go with Lamar Miller's teammate, and that's DeAndre Hopkins. Hopkins, to me, is the perfect case of talent not automatically equating to fantasy football. Because he's talented, but his situation isn't exactly ideal, and it hasn't been for a while now. I think part of the reason that we view Hopkins as such a good fantasy wideout, or as a second-round fantasy asset, is still based on what he did for 11 weeks 2 seasons ago. That season, the Texans started 2-5, and Hopkins was pacing to break the targets record. He was the best wide receiver asset you could possibly find in fantasy football. But when the Texans' defense played to its potential and the team started winning and their pass-to-run ratio dropped significantly, Hopkins' volume also dropped to fewer than 10 targets per game. That's almost a 5-target drop from when the Texans were a losing team. He's now produced just 2 top 12 performances in PPR formats since week 11 of 2015. And while I do think the Texans will see an increase in offensive efficiency no matter who they throw under center this season, I'm not convinced that the increase will be drastic enough to warrant Hopkins' ADP, even with his big market share. Next on the list is the first and only quarterback, and that is Derek Carr. For whatever reason, Carr is listed as QB6 and as a 7th rounder on fantasyfootballcalculator.com, which is a crime. Seriously, whoever is drafting him there should be fined. I get it. He's got good weapons and a great offensive line, but he's also got some regression working against him. Among all 200-plus attempt passers over the last 2 years, Carr's 2016 passing net expected points, or efficiency according to NumberFire's net expected points metric, versus his success rate has shown a higher difference than any other passer in football. Basically, with a high expected points per dropback rate, which is what Carr had, you'd expect also a high success rate. If there's a low success rate, that's a red flag, as the player may be boosting his efficiency with big plays, which are then unsustainable. And that's sort of what we're looking at with Carr. In the early and mid rounds, you need something hugely obvious to stick out as the reason to draft a quarterback in a single quarterback league. When you can get guys for free late in drafts, why would you reach? You basically need to see a path for a particular passer to being the top passer in that season. That's a very difficult thing to do with Derek Carr. And as a result, I have no idea why you'd take him in the 7th round of fantasy drafts. The next guy I want to talk about is Doug Martin. Do people know that he's going to miss 3 games this year? And that he wasn't very good last year? Because for some reason, he's being selected as RB27, sandwiched between Mark Ingram and Adrian Peterson, which are two backs with a ton of upside. I just don't get it. Jaquizz Rodgers was easily the best back on the Bucs last year, according to a lot of metrics that you can look at, including success rate, which I like to cite for running backs. And even when Martin was decent in 2015, he was still hitting a top 24 performance on 53.55% of his games. For some context, that's still basically RB2 numbers. And the backfield is loaded with potential talent, and there's even the chance that Martin comes back from his suspension, and he's not even the starter. Look, I'm not banking on that per se, but it's in his range of outcomes. And holding on to him for 3 weeks while he wastes away on your bench is not a winning strategy in most fantasy leagues. We've now entered the top three, and I think now's the time that I bring up Marshawn Lynch. I didn't realize it until just now, but I've got a lot of teammate pairs on this list. Maybe that means something, but it's probably just a coincidence. I've let it be known why I'm not super into Marshawn at a second round price tag many, many times in this podcast. The Raiders have openly stated that they'd be fine with him seeing fewer than 200 carries this year, and he hasn't played a snap of a regular season football game since November of 2015. He's 31 years old this season, and the last time that we saw him, he was not the same type of running back. As awesome of a human as he is, and as much as I love me some Marshawn, I just cannot justify drafting him in the second round of drafts this season. So about those teammates, well, number two on this list is a teammate of Doug Martin's who I've already talked about, and that's OJ Howard. I can't fathom his ADP on fantasyfootballcalculator.com right now. It's at tight end 14, ahead of a usable and potentially breakout tight end in Austin Hooper. And I think he's going to be outscored straight up, that's OJ Howard, by his teammate Cameron Brate, who's being selected 3 tight end picks later. The reason's pretty simple. The transition from college to the pros at tight end is very, very difficult to make. In NFL history, only 7 tight ends have hit the 50 reception mark as rookies. Though it was a down season for tight ends in 2016, every single top 15 fantasy player at the position hit the 50 reception mark. Basically, Howard's going to have to be somewhat of an outlier to be relevant in fantasy football and live up to his current ADP. With a decent number of mouths to feed in Tampa Bay also, I just don't see how I'll have the market share to do that. Last but not least is the number one top overrated player in fantasy football, and that is, drumroll please, LeGarrette Blount. The Garrett has mostly just thrived in New England over his career, and going from New England to Philly is going to be a big deal for him. The average drive for the Pats last year started with a point margin of plus 7.2, which was the best in football. For Philadelphia, they started each drive down by 1.2 points. Only 38 of Blount's 299 touches last year came while his team was trailing. And when the team was trailing, he averaged just 3.3 yards per carry. Philly definitely does not have a cakewalk schedule this year, and there's no reason to believe they'll have ultra-heavy positive game scripts like Blount's been used to seeing in New England. And if they don't, it's not as though Blount's going to be on the field on passing downs because he's never been a pass-catching back, and they have Darren Sproles. Oh, and yeah, I should probably mention this. There are reports that Blount might be a cut candidate. He might not even be on the team this year. If you're staring him down in the 6th or 7th round, please stop. Please avoid LeGarrette Blount. I'm begging you. I would legitimately take 9th and 10th round running backs over LeGarrette Blount this season. That's how overrated he is right now. That'll do it for the list though, everyone. I hope that you enjoyed the breakdown. If you did, then do me a favor and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, or Google Play, or all of the above if you really want to. And as I've been mentioning on the show, I'm doing a giveaway for anyone who leaves a rating and review on iTunes. If you do, you'll be placed in a random drawing to win a free NumberFire Premium membership. There will be two winners before the NFL regular season starts. But thanks for listening, everyone. I'll be back in your ears on Friday with a mailbag episode. If you've got questions for it, hit me up on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Peace out.